Hi, this is Ryan Parrish from In Parallel, Celebrity, and Hopes Fall, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
Hello and welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav. Hope you're having a happiest, laborious day weekend. That sounded better in my mind, but y'all know what I mean. We're all celebrating the right to work, I think. I don't exactly know why we get the day off on a day called Labor Day. I think we should all have to work on Labor Day. And then they should give us another day off just called Just Stay the Hell Home Day. Maybe I don't understand it. So we're just going to move on. This episode that y'all are about to listen to with Ryan Parrish of Hopes Fall and his new band In Parallels is special to me, and I'll tell you why. This show has been edited by somebody else. I outsourced for the first time since January. I got a buddy named Brian Patton who stepped up to the plate and said he'd be willing to help out the show. I love him. I love him so much because he's a good helper. So, everybody give it up for Brian Patton. Go ahead. I'll give you time. Brian has his own podcast called The Cycle. And he also has a musical thing that he puts out there called The Meltdown. He also has a blog that he writes. He is starting a record label. This is a busy dude. He's a Philadelphia boy. He's from DC. Welcoming him into the fold. Brian, thanks for your help. Let's talk a little bit about this episode. You are going to hear at the very end, you're going to hear a clip from Ryan Parrish's new band In Parallel. The song's called Figureheads. This is the first time that they're putting it out there. They're in the process of mixing and mastering it, and he had the guy who's working on it send a small clip, and I'm proud to say that this is the first time anybody's heard anything. Thank you, Ryan, for giving that up. This is a fun little story about some of the stuff that you didn't hear on Bill Powers' podcast when Ryan was on Urban Achiever. I want to give a couple shout-outs for a couple people who gave me shout-outs. my buddy Steve mentioned the show and myself and played a band that I play drums in called Solomores on his internet radio show called Faster for the Master. So I'll put a link in there. He gives the show a shout out. He also warns people that I have no filter and that it's not suitable for work. I'm kind of proud of myself for that. But I understand where he's coming from. Some people don't dig on that. So thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Go check out his show. That'll be in notes also. And Talk To Me podcast talked to Jeff from Carcass.
What?
And he mentioned that he spoke to me for my show. That'll be coming up in the near future. And he has an episode where people are going to go on and listen to Carcass, and he tells everybody to go listen to my show. How cool is that? So thanks, Toomey. Appreciate it. Shout out to you for the shout out to me. Toomey, the shout out from Toomey to me. This gets confusing. His last name is, you could plug it in anywhere. It's great. We loaded this episode up with a lot of Ryan's other projects. Hopes Fall, of course. Good Wolves, Sincerity Guild, the In Parallel song that no one's heard yet. So coming out of this is a tribute to Toomey talking to me on his Carcass episode. I'm playing Buried Dreams from Carcass's album Heartwork because I love that song. I mean, everybody loves the song Heartwork. It's a classic. But Buried Dreams is killer. So let's listen to a little Carcass, and then we're going to flip it over to Ryan. And everybody stay tuned for the last minute or so where I get to play an exclusive clip from In Parallel called Figureheads. Ryan, thanks. Brian, thanks for the editing. Later, y'all. Talk to you in a week. Thanks for coming on. In Parallel, Hopes Fall, Celebrity.
Some dude, others.
Yeah, there's even more. Your website is like, there's other musical projects on there that I was like, wow, I never even heard of those before. So we're going to talk about all of it.
I love it. Let's do it.
The reason why I brought you on the show is because I heard really good things about you from one Seth Werkheiser. He used to work at, oh my God, I'm flaking on the name of the... He used to work at, not Buzz Grinder, the...
Well, he does Skull Toaster now, right? Mm-hmm. That's his new gig.
Yeah, but the AOL blog, the metal blog.
Oh, when he was at... oh, God. I was even interviewed by that blog, and I can't remember the name of it.
I know. He worked there for years. He thought of the name In My Basement, and...
Well, they had several properties. They had Spinner was one of them. That was like the more indie rock version, and then... Oh, God. I can't even remember the name of the guy, Carlos, that interviewed me, but I can't remember the name. Noise Creep.
Noise Creep.
That's it.
Idiot. So I heard good things. Slide right past that. I heard good things about you from Seth when he had an interview on Noise Creep.
Yeah.
He has always spoken highly of you. You said he's a great dude. And then I got to listen to you on Bill Powers' Urban Achiever podcast, and I think just about everybody who listens to my show listens to Bill's. So
yeah, I do. There's a carryover between audiences, you know.
Sort of the same crowd. Yeah, I lean a little bit more metal, but whatever.
Yeah,
but I think I kind of want to do a little bit of a companion piece to it. I definitely don't want to repeat ourselves and talk about the same stuff and how much you loved Strong Arm and all that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I could talk for days about that band.
I should just do a Strong Arm tribute episode. I'd be so happy to do that.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to do like a companion piece. So I think people should go check out Bill's podcast with you because you do a lot of formative stuff, a lot of growing up.
Oh, yeah, man.
A lot of the church, a lot of the same crap that people went through with youth group and not getting understood and all that and everything. But kind of pick up where you left off from that one, I think. Because people haven't heard that for like, it's probably pushing a year since that came out, right?
Well, I think we did that Yeah, I think we recorded maybe in January or February, so we're going on like it's crazy. Okay. The year's almost over, but
flying by.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about some of the in-betweensy stuff that you didn't really get to nail down with Bill. So
totally, man.
I know you and I were talking on the phone earlier, and I'm so upset with myself for bringing this out not on the air. I should have brought it out organically, but I dropped the bomb on you. That the main one thing that I know I wanted to say that I wrote down, I was like, I have to mention this to you, is that I had Corey from Norma Jean on the show, and he mentioned that he had a Hope's Fall tattoo, and I was like, no way, because I remember I talked to Corey right around the same, and the Corey thing was kind of a bigger episode for me.
Oh, absolutely,
right around when you came out, and I was like, oh yeah, he has his tattoo. If I ever get to talk to Ryan, I should mention that to him.
Yeah, man. So. I think he's got the anchor. We had a...
I was so hoping he had a portrait of you on his leg or something.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to see that. But yeah, we had...
Like a whole calf piece of your face?
Yeah. I think we did like a run of t-shirts with like an anchor on it and some stickers and stuff. And I think that was when he was still in Esocaris.
Sounds about right.
Which they were a really awesome band. But yeah, I think that's right around the time when he got that. That would have been like probably early 2000s, 2001, 2002, something like that.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
About that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
There seems to be a little bit of a moving and shaking going on. People talking about the industry and the record labels and the deals from back then and everything. And you said that you could appreciate where people are coming from when they want to talk about it and everything. So
yeah,
I kind of want to give you the floor. I mean, rather than going through and being like, here's how Hope's Fall started and all that and everything. I just wanted to talk to you about where you're at now and what you're up to. Your website is. There's so much on here, I kind of don't know where to start. Other than just going, it's almost like reading a Wikipedia page because it's all like a timeline, you know?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to talk to you about what you're up to and you know, how the Hope's Fall thing went down. And go ahead. You have the floor.
Yeah,
I mean... Start talking.
I mean, if you want to talk about my experience in the industry, I mean, personally speaking, you know, as soon as... labels and managers and booking agents and all of those things kind of entered the picture really in any of the projects that I've done over the past however many years it's been. Just this is me speaking personally and not for anybody else, but
sure,
I've always struggled with that part of being in a band. And, you know, as soon as you have to please other people outside of yourselves and your immediate band members, I don't know what it was about it, but it was not a natural fit for me. Namely, people giving their opinion about how they think you should do things or how the artwork should look or what bands you should go on tour with. All of those things, for me, were a struggle because I like to... feel like I had some sense of ownership over what was happening. And
sure,
in some of my bands, when that aspect of the industry got heavy-handed is when I started to become disinterested and maybe even a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Not bitter, but disillusioned, I think. Because I started to realize it wasn't necessarily about... And even on an independent level, this is something that probably people that listen to the genres of music that I've been involved with and a lot of your other guests think, oh, well, it's all about the art and all about expression. But there is a business to be made and money to be made behind even a band playing aggressive music and or alternative music or whatever it might be. And I really struggled with that part of it. Some of the other guys didn't in both of I guess the biggest bands I were in being Hope's Fall and Celebrity. Some people that's a more natural fit, the business end of things. For me, I was really not interested in that. I was interested in writing and expressing an idea and then kind of connecting with fans on a direct level, whether that's playing shows or talking to somebody after a show. So I don't know if that's kind of what you wanted to hear, or if you want to dig in further there. I mean,
I think as far as digging in further, I think people know you from Hope's Fall and Celebrity. So I think people kind of just maybe might be interested, like what exactly went down with Hope's Fall? Cause
sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, we started out really, and you know, I won't go super deep since, like you said, this is a kind of a companion piece, but you know, early we started with a bedroom record label, which was a friend essentially that pressed our first record, mm-hmm. handshake deal. There wasn't really a business partnership or relationship there. It was a goodwill type of thing. Hey, I believe in what you guys do. I want to help you out. And that would have been The Frailty of Words, the first Hope's Fall record. We were like 19 when we wrote that, 18 and 19, very young. I mean, our drummer was 16 at the time. So we were kids. And that led to Take Hold Records, which would have been the No Wings to Speak of EP. And that was, again, a handshake agreement with Chad Johnson, who is an awesome guy, ran a great record label. He just believed in what we were doing and was like, let's shake on it. And if you guys want to do more with me in the long run, awesome. If not, I consider it a success just, you know, having, you know, built the relationship with you guys. So up until those two releases, everything felt really good. We were booking our own tours.
Without the assistance of a booking agent or
I mean, it was a lot of just like dialing up friends or calling up, you know, some of the guys and bands that we knew, like, hey, do you guys want to joint go in on a tour and help book it? It was really not until Satellite Years, which is when all of the business end of Hope's Fall started to kind of come into the picture. We signed with Trustkill, which was a 3-record deal. And as soon as the Trustkill thing happened, that's when manager was hired, booking agent. And that's when things started to get really, very business oriented, and
it became like Hope's Fall LLC kind of.
Yeah. And I totally understand, you know, like a lot of bands, if you want to get to that next level, you need that outside help. And
sure.
I wasn't totally opposed to it by any means, but, my time ended very shortly after all the business deals started to happen. Pre-Satellite Years, and then my exit after recording Satellite Years. And, you know, same thing with Celebrity. You know, I moved to Nashville after Hope's Fall to join Celebrity, which was a existing band. And they had put out an EP with a friend of ours, Chris, who ran One Day Savior. He was in a band called Sky Came Falling.
Oh, wow, okay.
And he put out the first Celebrity EP, which I was not on. I joined for their first full length. And we had a manager and a booking agent as well, but I don't know. It's just, it's always been a challenge for me to marry, and this isn't like a egotistical or anything like that. Like, it's always been difficult to marry art and commerce for me. I'm not saying it's not doable, but there's parts of it that have always felt uncomfortable for me.
Like what specifically was making you go, oh, dude, I don't know.
Sure, yeah. So kind of one of the first moments that sticks out to me is, so Chad.
You're getting so heavy so fast. Yeah, is this cool? Should we get a drink?
Yeah, I'm kind of an intense dude, man, by nature. So I kind of
just get into it, man. What pisses you off about what? I
kind of dive right in. You know, that's just who I am, for better or worse.
That's cool.
But one of the first things where I noticed, you know, wow, this is not what I had expected, was, you know, Chad put out No Wings to Speak Of on Take Hold. Well, when Trustkill came along, they bought the rights to No Wings to re-release it on Takehold, under Takehold's name. And that was fine by us. I had no problem with that. But when I first started to notice that this was not about necessarily what we were creating, and it was a product, was one of the guys at Trustkill came to us and said, hey, we're going to put this out. Love the EP. It's going to be a great intro for when you guys record Satellite Years, but we want to change the cover artwork. And for me, the cover artwork of that EP was like one of my favorite aspects of it. And I had a real problem with it. And really, all they wanted to do was change how big the name was on the cover, and also put the name of the EP on the cover instead of just on the spine. Okay. And I wasn't particular to that. And that's when I started to realize, whoa, wait a minute. Now we've got other people's, you know, opinions kind of coming into the fray outside of the band dynamic. So that's just kind of one example of, and it's a very small example, but you know, it can kind of snowball from there.
I can respect that. It doesn't sound like that big of a deal because they just want to put the name and the title on the EP. So it's probably a little bit easier to identify, but at the same time, no, it's mine. That's not how I want it to look.
Right. Yeah. And there's a bit of selfishness and narcissism in that. And I'm fully aware of that. Anyone that plays music, there's an element of that to what's going on. But to me, you know, thematically, that EP represented a certain thing. And by making the name really big and putting the name on it, to me, it changed the idea of what we were trying to say. I wanted people to buy that EP and look at the artwork and feel a sense of alienation when they look at the artwork, because it's very ethereal and there's not really a lot to focus on. And I was afraid by blowing up the name really big that it was going to be like, here's the band, you know, versus, hey, stare into this piece of artwork.
Got it.
While listening to the music kind of thing.
I see both sides of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I get Trustkill's, like, we want to be able to pick out the album from other albums instead of it looking just like a piece of artwork. At the same time, the person who created it doesn't want it to look that way. So there's already a bonk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So somebody has to come out on top.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man.
Okay. Interesting. I like this kind of stuff. I like this nitty gritty under the hood stuff, because I think people kind of get wrapped up in some of the bigger, more shallow stuff, but I'm really trying to understand how the industry worked for certain people and what made people walk away or get or stay involved with it or whatever.
Right. Chandler Owen, who was our close friend growing up, did all of the artwork for Hope's Fall, and he was kind of like the sixth member of the band in a way, and the visual identity of Hope's Fall was always very important to us. We wanted to present a certain image and take people to a certain place, and that was a conversation between the band and Chandler and the label, because Chandler was like, this is what I intended it to be, via conversation with the band, and is also an idea of respecting the actual artist that created it, Chandler, who is really a visionary guy and one of my best friends. But
that already interests me, because a band like Hope's Fall had a guy that was dedicated to just, like, you guys were so serious about art, you had a guy dedicated to the art of the band. Like, that was like his job. Like, that reminds me of what's his name? Derek
Hess. Right? Did the Converge work with Converge a lot?
Oh, okay. I think I was going to go after Derek Riggs, I think is the name of the guy who did like all the Iron Maiden artwork.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, they have a visual identity, no doubt.
Right. They had a guy whose job, I think it's Derek Riggs, whatever his name is. They had a guy whose his job was artwork for that band. Now, Iron Maiden's 50 times as big as what we're talking
about. Oh, my God. Still. Yeah. it's next level.
Right. But when a band has a vision, like one of the other bands, one of my favorite bands, Hot Water Music.
Oh, yeah.
They have an identifiable kind of a paper cut, stacked artwork looking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
that's just like,
it's, you see the cover of their record and you know who it is immediately, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't need the Hot Water Music logo, even though they can even just slap that on the cover without the actual text, and I would know who it is because of the logo, because I get all that. I really dig it. It's almost like we all know how to find an album, especially nowadays online. You can click a button and it's coming to my house.
But
I like the, I just sense that those are my guys because it just looks like theirs, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I like that. That aspect of everything. And for me, that was always something that was as interesting to me as the music was, you know, like for instance, in Hope's Fall, it was a conscious decision not to take band photos. We were like, we're never going to put a band photo in any of our albums because we didn't want people to focus on the image of the band, how we dressed or what we looked like. All of those things were things that we talked about on the front end. We wanted it just to be about the music and flipping through the liner notes and looking at the imagery that Chandler would create based on what he was inspired by when he listened to the music. And just little things like that were always fun little nerdy conversations that we like to have. But then, you know, you've got management that comes in and says, you got to have a band photo. And it's got to be like this kind of band photo. And we're like, oh, man, like,
You know. But I get it, because then you, you start to like the band and you see the band photo and you go, oh, he's the artsy one.
Right.
That guy's wearing a tank top. He's either a hardcore fan or the drummer.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you start like pigeonholing people.
Absolutely.
And, I get the whole, consciously avoiding that from the beginning. That's not a bad idea. But then again, you get into something as big as Trustkill. Fall in line, soldier. You got to do what everybody else
does.
Yeah,
and I mean, Trustkill, I mean, we landed at Trustkill like right when that scene was just climbing, you know, and he had, you know, a lot of big bands, you know, that were succeeding. And I thought you guys
were on Take Hold for longer than just that first thing. I thought you guys had a second one on there. I guess I'm wrong.
No, right? just the EP.
Okay.
I have
to ask, just as I might not keep this. Do you remember a band called Tantrum of the Muse?
Oh yeah, yeah. We played several shows with those dudes. I remember
Steven's my cousin.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, his mom and my mom are sisters.
That's amazing, man. Yeah. Small world.
Very. Do you remember Crutch?
Vaguely, yes.
And then they switched their name to Alathian?
Oh, man. Where were they from?
Here, because I was the drummer.
Oh, did we play shows together?
I think we might have played one show together, but it might have been one of those big shows where we played so early and you guys played late enough and we might not have overlapped at all.
Where was it? Do you remember?
Dude, I don't know. We were based out of Harrisburg and Philly, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So it would have been like draw a giant circle around that chunk of the East Coast. It would have been in there somewhere because we never really left that area except for Cornerstone once a year. And on the way to Cornerstone, we would do like Ohio and Michigan Metal Fest and stuff like that and everything. Along there somewhere. Maybe. I don't know. But I remember... the one thing that I remember about Hope's Fall was Bruce Fitzhugh. We covered Breathing Murder on a Living Sacrifice comp, a tribute album to Living Sacrifice. We covered Breathing Murder off of their Inhabit album. And when we played Cornerstone for the first time in 2001, at least first time I ever played with them, we did a generator show and we asked Bruce if he would come sing. And he was like, yeah, of course I will. And you know how tracking somebody down in 2001 at Cornerstone was like, where's Bruce?
I hope I run into him.
You're looking at the schedule and you're like, I'm going to try to guess what bands he's going to be into. So you go here and you go here and everything. He actually had to leave. He was late and he had to leave the Hope's Fall show to come sing with us. And like, we were like, oh my God, like we hung flyers on every urinal. Like we printed 600 of these shits and we hung them all over Cornerstone and people expected Bruce. We had this giant generator show. Kids were doing backflips off of vans. We closed down a road. It was like one of the bigger generator shows I've ever seen. I'm pretty proud of that, even though it's still just a generator show. It's just a skateboard ramp, you know, but everyone was kind of getting like, where's Bruce? And when he showed up, he was like, dude, sorry, I was watching Hope's Fall. And we were like, screw Hope's fall. You're late. There's my Hope's fall.
Oh, man. Story. Yeah. That's amazing.
Bruce watched half your set and walked because he had to join ours because we were playing some stupid wooden ramp somewhere. Yeah. And, that's it. That was the closest I came to meeting you at that cornerstone anyway. Wow, did I derail you. Anyway, you were talking about I thought you put a second one out on Take Hold, and then I did Tantrum and Crutch. And sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, Chad kind of left it open to us if we wanted to do a full length on Take Hold. He was, you know, totally cool with it. But that's when, you know, Trust Kill and Solid State, you know, came to the table with deals. And
Solid State wanted you until you were like 37 years old.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And yeah, we just knew that wasn't, you know, even at that age, we're like, man, we're not going to make eight records. It's not going to happen, man.
you didn't think you were going to be U2?
No. I was playing the wrong style of music if I wanted to be in U2, you know?
Yeah, nobody from that genre made eight albums.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple now.
There's a couple, man. I mean, speaking of, I mean, Corey, I mean, how many records are Norma Jean into now?
Norma Jean, Zayo, they're about to crack off their 11th one, you know?
Yeah, I mean, jury's out to see if Under Oath will, you know, put out another one after this reunion tour.
Yeah. Well, they broke up and got back together 20 minutes later, and yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, hey, this last tour seemed to be really successful, so props to them, man.
You mentioned something on the phone. I don't know if this is the right time to veer in this direction.
No, man, let's go for it.
You said, in speaking, you said you listened to the Mark Garza Embodiment episode, and you said, I'm an open book, man. I'll talk about anything, even if you want to talk about the faith aspect of it and everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm actually surprised how many people ask me to not discuss faith, and whether they're coming from that side of it or not that side of it. Some people just don't want to have the conversation, and you were like, I'm down with it. So
yeah.
So when you said that you would have that you were interested in talking about it, what exactly were you driving at?
You know, I listen to your podcast a lot, Billy's podcast a lot, and you know, a lot of the people you talk to come from a scene that kind of faith was intrinsically tied to it. Mm-hmm. To a lot of bands, and over the years, you see people grow up, and you know, they either continue in that scene or they walk away from it and continue with their personal lives. And I'm always interested to see kind of, you know, where people end up on the faith spectrum after having that experience, because when you're in a band, even on a small platform, it can play a lot of games with your head, you know, and your faith, because you've got a lot of people tugging at you, whether it be a fan, wanting to pray for you that you don't even know, and wanting to be respectful and humble and accept that gesture while also feeling uncomfortable. Sure. Or you've got a label, or if you were to play a place of faith, a church building or a building affiliated with a church, you know, there's so many expectations on bands, and, you know, to be something and to espouse a certain thing and to act a certain way, which, you know, when you're a 20-year-old person and your brain hasn't fully formed and you haven't fully gone out into the world, that's tough, you know? And I've always been interested to see kind of, you know, I've seen a lot of people from that era walk away from faith completely and turn their back on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their personal experience. I don't know what led those people to those ends. I'm respectful of it. But, you know, it played a big part, you know, in me too, you know. It was really tricky to try and say, hey, you know, yes, our music does have a deeper meaning beyond just being angry or discontent or whatever we were trying to express, but also have people extending enough grace to you to allow you to be a human and to mess up. Right. And
it didn't sound like that was allowed often.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, I mean, personally speaking, my faith journey has been a roller coaster, not necessarily because of Hope's Fall or anything that came after that, but I just find faith and people talking about it, I think it's a really interesting subject. Mm-hmm. And some people are really cagey and they don't want to discuss it. And that's, you know, their prerogative, and they may not be comfortable going to that level. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm going down a rabbit hole here, but for me, like, it's really interesting to hear maybe where some of the bands that influenced me, where they ended up on the faith spectrum. Mm-hmm. Not speaking about anybody in particular, but to me, that was a big part of why I was drawn to that genre of music. And for a lot of people to be, you know, interviewed or asked a lot of questions about it, for them not to touch on that a lot of times, I'm kind of like, oh, I would have loved to have heard more about that, you know, about where they ended up, no matter what that is. Whether you search through the depths of your soul and ended up in a place where you don't believe in God anymore, or maybe you're somewhere in between, you're riding the fence, you don't know.
And what bothers me about it is I know I'm just going to throw it out there because I'm with Mark Garza. I don't care who, I don't think enough people listen to me that it matters anyway, but, taking my friend Scott from Zayo as an example, I feel like every time I've ever heard a conversation with somebody discuss his faith or the fact that he is an atheist that does not have faith, I feel like they're coming from the other side of it, and it's like a debate team, and I just feel like, wait a minute, like if somebody who is a professing Christian just wants to witness to somebody, all they want to do is be heard, you should pay the same respect to somebody that is not cut from the same cloth. Like that's my biggest problem with it, is like, yeah, but you're wrong. That kind of overall vibe of it. And I just feel like, wait a minute, we have to talk to everybody, listen to all sides of it. And, you know, I mean, we're really going off on a tangent here, but I've been accused of like, tiptoeing around universalism and like, be careful because you get slippery slope. That stupid term, slippery slope, is so abused and thrown out there about everything. But I feel like if you just don't want to listen to what anybody has to say, unless they're sitting in the pew next to you, what the hell are we doing? You know, just the fact that you admit that it's a roller coaster, like whether it's up or down or anything, but like I'm always interested in hearing that like somebody got into this in all the honesty and innocence of, you know, I'm a professing Christian and I just want to be in a Christian band. I'd love to be accepted by everybody, but I know it's not going to happen. And 15 years later, that person has been so run through the ringer and so beat up over it that they walked away from it. And it kind of started here. It started at this scene and just developed into a man or woman pushing 40 that just said, I can't do it anymore. And it all,
absolutely.
It's damaging, man. It's a shame to look back on it and have something that sat so dear with so many people is now what drove them away, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, my feelings on the matter, you know, depending on how you grew up or if you grew up in church or didn't grow up in church or you were part of this scene or you weren't, you know, I feel like there's this tendency for people to say, well, you either have faith or you don't have faith, right? And I feel like that's really the human way to try and make sense of the world, is to place people in these buckets. Like, you're in this bucket and I'm in this bucket, and there's nothing in between those two buckets. And for me, you know, over the years, walking through my own doubt and my own questions about how I was raised or beliefs that, you know, I struggled with, I kind of came to a place as an adult where a faith is somewhere in between those two buckets. It's, you know, some days I wake up and I have complete faith, and then I could be driving to work and someone could run me off the road and I would lose complete faith. And to me, it's
well, what do you mean nuanced. You lose complete faith? Because you shook your fist and cussed the guy off, all of a sudden you lost your faith? Or did you just have a moment of letting the human side take over, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, there's that struggle of, struggling with humanity and life on Earth and dealing with broken people that have been hurt, that hurt other people. And
I know, I'm not arguing with you, but I know people that they get cut off in traffic and say, well, praise Jesus. I guess he had somewhere to get that's more important than where I have to go. And God bless him. And I wish him a safe journey. And
I'm not that guy.
Human being, man. You're not experiencing emotions. You're like, it's almost like you got this weird, like Zach Braff in Garden State. Like he's just taking pills to get through emotions and doesn't even know how to experience them. We're just saying the robotic Christianese things to just get through it because I don't want to experience what real life feels like. Because once in a while, you just want to be like, "Fuck you!" You
know, oh yeah,
and that doesn't make it right. That's not the.
No, I had one of those moments yesterday, man. I mean, you know, we were driving back from visiting my wife's family in Michigan, and somebody cut me off. You know, and I had a moment. But I guess what I'm trying to say is just like life is more nuanced than buckets. You know, yes. It's like and putting people in buckets and faith in a bucket. And to me, faith is a roller coaster. There's days where weeks or months or spans of time where I feel very in tune with something larger than myself, which I believe to be God.
I agree.
People use all different types of terminology for that. There's other weeks, days, whatever, where I feel completely alone that we live in a world where there is no meaning and you see all these tragic events that happen. So I feel like, and Billy actually has mentioned this on his podcast where it's kind of become a cool thing to have walked totally away from faith from maybe some people in the old scene, but I just want to try and be more nuanced with people and hear their perspective more. Because you don't know what people are going through. You don't know what they're facing. And I don't know. Faith is, it's a big part of my life, but I still don't feel like I have even, you know, a grip on half of it, if that makes any sense. It's still this thing that is elusive to me, but I still strive to want to learn more and to connect with people, whether that's through your podcast or through friendships or just having conversations where you can open up about this kind of stuff and
right on
and be okay with it and it not be kind of like this sticky thing that people are scared of. And like you said, no, you're wrong or I'm right. Just having a back and forth about it, you know?
Church is that little electric spark during the conversation between the person. It's so far removed from that brick and mortar place on Sunday mornings to me.
Anyway. Absolutely, man.
I'm not saying don't go. I'm not saying go. I'm just saying like, man, sit down and walk away exhausted from a conversation, you know? You want to have the shallow, hey, how you doing? How's the weather? Like the little crap you do on the elevator from the first to the third floor, whatever. You want to go through your whole life having those conversations, you're going to get nowhere with anybody. But I've had knockdown, drag-em-out conversations where by the end of my burrito, I'm kind of tearing up because we're just hitting each other so hard, you know? And that's church to me, man. Whether I'm sitting there with someone who professes the same faith or somebody who's coming from the complete other side of it, and they're like, yeah, all right, but listen to this side, and I'm like, dang, I never thought of it that way before, you know? And I just to hear you say that you're utilizing podcasts as a way to connect with people is exactly why I want to be doing this, is because this is so much more than just so what was it like to be on Trustkill? Cool. It was like on a blog, like it doesn't mean anything to anybody.
I think that's why people listen to podcasts, right? They want to connect. They want to feel like there's other people out in the world that feel the same way they do or had a similar experience. I mean, I think that's part of being human is wanting to relate. And something that kind of, you know, I experienced a lot specifically and not just to speak about Hope's Fall, but, you know, there was this dividing line, like, people were like, oh, well, they were a Christian band during this period, and then after this period, they were no longer a Christian band. And I mean, that tied to, like, part of my leaving the band, right? And I think a lot of people saw it as that, and it wasn't that at all. You know, I can't speak about those guys' faith that, you know, carried the torch after me. I mean, we're still very close friends, and still talk to this day. But I think you have to extend a little more grace to people. And unfortunately, not everyone, I don't want to whitewash, I don't like when people do that, but there was a segment of that scene that was very hard line and was like, well, you're either a Christian or you're not. And
yeah, it's gross.
You know, it's just, that's a weird place to be. And yeah, it's a weird place when there's people that you don't know saying those types of things to you. But, you know, I'm at peace with my journey.
Entire thing feel weird the entire time, where it was like Mark was saying, like, we could play a Christian music festival or a church and make $1,500 and have a place to stay and free food or anything, or we can fight for upstream and go out there and try to be a legitimate metal band, because that scene doesn't even legitimize what was going on in this scene, which was like all the legitimacy in the world we needed. It was everything to us, you know?
Right.
You'd go out there and get your ass handed to you and get handed $70 and be like, I guess we're not legit. You know, there is a total separation there. And the fact, I mean, I kind of feel like we did it to ourselves, you know, mm-hmm. I kind of feel like we kind of encapsulated this giant youth group and made it a thing. This is what we do. This is how we do it. And we take care of our own, and, you know, we mm-hmm. make each other ziti and buy pizza for the bands. And, yeah, like this whole scene. And then you step out there. Look at how many bands stepped from underneath the Christian umbrella on their label, and they went out in the real world, and got punched in the mouth, and the band broke up after the next album because they were like, I can't afford to have my. I'm going to lose my wife and kid. I can't afford to go.
Absolutely.
I can't even afford to get home right now. And then all of a sudden, like you said, there's this weird crock pot of now the faith is mixed into it. And now you start questioning God. I feel like God's up there going, I didn't do that. Like, you're the idiot that signed the contract, you know? And the whole thing just got really ugly for a lot of people. And I love these conversations.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, honestly, you know, Hope's Fall specifically, we really tried to not play churches, and mm-hmm. it wasn't because we were too good for it or any of that. We really wanted to go into real venues and try to prove ourselves there, and that was a conscious decision even in signing to Trustkill, which had no affiliation with that scene at all. In fact, their name was a complete rejection of Christianity. I mean, the original logo for Trustkill, the two T's were upside down crosses. And, you know, personally for me, it was like, and I'm not speaking for everyone, but it was, I wanted to kind of infiltrate a little bit and subvert, right? That's always been interesting to me. And, well, here's this label that started out with two upside down crosses, and now here's a band with members that have faith. And we weren't on top of a podium, you know, on a street corner, like telling people what they should believe, but we were definitely tackling some deep spiritual questions in the songs. And I think we made a conscious decision early on to try and play real venues and not totally avoid Christian venues, but we definitely were wary of that. But, you know, after my time in that band, being in Celebrity was such a breath of fresh air because there was no affiliation with anything. So immediately I was like in a band where there weren't those expectations, which in a way was very freeing.
Sure.
We could just get up on stage and play music, and it was about the music.
You clearly didn't leave Hope's Fall because of a faith thing, because you just said earlier that you left Hope's Fall to join Celebrity, which wasn't a Christian band, so that wouldn't have made any sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I was asked to leave Hope's Fall. I mean, I like to clarify that, and not in any sense of stirring up dirt, because that's all water under the bridge between me and those guys, and I love them to death. But, you know, I was asked to leave. So, you know, after that had happened, my life kind of came crashing to the ground, and I didn't know what was next. And, you know, Celebrity was an amazing opportunity for me that kind of landed in my lap. And I just so happened to be a huge fan of the band, which made it even an easier decision.
Sure.
So, you know, really, I mean, it feels like that span of time was really long between Hope's Fall and Celebrity, but it wasn't. I mean, I left Hope's Fall in April or May of 2002. And I was in Celebrity by January of 2003, so less than a year.
Okay.
And then I was kind of off and running with Celebrity for about 4 or 5 years. Part of the time, full time, trying to do it as a full time gig, and then the last couple of years were more part time, where, you know, we kind of transitioned into the next phase of our life. As adults, you know,
getting married and having kids and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, marriage came a lot later after that, but but yeah, I mean, moving from that idea of I want to be in a band full time to okay, maybe this lifestyle isn't sustainable for me for the long run, and coming to grips with that, and then walking through that. And then being okay with that. And that's a long, drawn-out process. It was for me. Some people transition very easily, but I really struggled with it.
Okay.
Went into actually a really deep depression and deciding to kind of, you know, say, okay, this thing will no longer be the sole focus. There will be other things that come after this. And I can continue to do music, but it will no longer be numero uno.
Did you mention before that you were asked to leave Hope's Fall? Did I know that?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's not something I bring up a lot because right. It was a really difficult time in my life, and it was a difficult time between my friendships with the guys in the band who I had grown up with my entire life. I mean, I had known most of those guys since third and fourth grade, and they were my best friends. So, it's not, I mean, now I'm okay to talk about it, but it's also okay, something that I don't like to, focus on too much because,
sure, that's
fine. You know, it kind of happened and it was really ugly and there was a lot of bad things that happen and mean words were said by both parties, me and the other guys in the band. And, you know, we were just at a strange time in our life and me specifically, I was at a really strange time in my life. And, it was not, easy to be in a band at that point.
Sure. Fair enough. You don't have to go any further, man. I just didn't know that, honestly. I feel like that's the first time I heard it.
You know, hindsight's 20/20, the cliche that everybody uses, but it's totally true because, you know, what came next for me really was the next natural step for me and led to what I consider, you know, the next phase of my life in making music with Celebrity and meeting my wife. And none of that would have been put into action if that incident didn't happen where I was asked to leave, because if I would have stayed with the band, I never would have moved to Nashville. I never would have joined Celebrity. I never would have made music with the three guys in that band, and I never would have met my wife. So I've got no regrets, man. I mean, it played out the way it was supposed to. And I'm just glad we've kind of come full circle to where, you know, my friendships were with them, I feel like are even stronger having gone through that together.
I think you opened with, we don't really need to talk much about the hopes falling. we keep like kind of sliding backwards into the mud into it.
It's what people know. I can't blame people. It's what the majority of people know about me, even though I feel like I've had this other musical life that not as many people have found. But that's the way it works, man. And I'm okay with that.
Let's hear about Celebrity then. When you got into that and moved to Nashville. I mean, you moved from, you lived in the Midwest out there somewhere.
Well, I was in we were in North Carolina, Hopes Falls. So we were East, lower East Coast, I guess, Southeast Coast. And then I packed my bags and moved west to Nashville, which is about 7 hours west of where I grew up in Charlotte. And moved in with the drummer of Celebrity, and we pretty much hit the road almost immediately.
It was like hit the ground running. You were a fan of the band, and within 3 weeks, you were in the van with them, and you were like, what the hell? Like, my head is still spinning, kind of a thing.
Yeah. It was crazy, man. I mean, I think back to that time in my life, and I'm not like a gambler or a roll-the-dice kind of guy. I'm like very calculated and like analytical and have to think everything through. But it really was kind of an amazing experience, like having been a fan of that band, and I came and tried out. And no joke, it usually takes me months to make a serious decision. As soon as we started playing together, I was like, I'm moving. It just made sense, and we gelled so well. And I just loved the spirit of that band and the guys in the band. And we were fast friends. I felt like I had known them forever, actually. It was kind of one of those weird things. Like, I joined up, and it was, all right, let's roll. You know, on paper, I always say this, it's kind of funny. Like, on paper, Celebrity should have been the band that got big because it was marketable. It was radio ready to an extent. But for whatever reason, it didn't happen for us. It didn't take off the way we had envisioned it. And part of that was our own fault, kind of jumping off tour too quickly. But, no regrets with those guys. I mean, I made 2 full lengths and an EP with them, and it's just honestly been a joy writing music with them in that band. We've continued to write, into our new project.
And that's one thing that you said that you definitely wanted to focus on for talking to me was, you said, I have a lot going on now. Like you said, everybody, oh wow, the guy from Hopes Falls on the podcast, and we're talking about 20 years ago. You have a lot currently going on right now within Parallel and all these other projects and everything. So get us up to speed. Like, what, take us through like a,
sure.
Oh, this is such a shitty podcast question, but take us through like a week of what it's like to do everything that you're doing, because you seem like one of these guys that has like 5 or 6 things going on the stove at one time.
Yeah. What was interesting to me about moving to Nashville was, it's a music town and there's musicians everywhere. And for me, when I moved here, obviously Celebrity was my focus and I was pouring my energy into that. But through that, I met all of these other people doing these different projects, and they would ask, hey, do you want to come play? And that was new for me, and I really embraced that. I was like, oh, sweet, yeah. I mean, this may not be the style of music that I play all the time, but this person's interested in having me come play, and I'm interested in their music. And through that, I just started playing on all these different projects. I played with my friend Peter, who was in a band called Death Comes to Madison, who Celebrity played with a lot here locally in Nashville, a great band, great, really talented dude. And his guitar player was unable to go on tour, so he's like, hey, can you go on this 7-day tour? And I did that. And then I had another friend that had an instrumental side project called the Sincerity Guild. Extremely talented drummer, Aaron Ford, who's gone on to play with a lot of different people. And he lost a guitar player. He's like, hey, do you want to come play? And I'm like, absolutely. So, you know, on the side, while I was doing Celebrity, there were these other kind of little gigs that would pop up. And for me, it was really enjoyable because it challenged me as a player. I was playing with different styles of people, and I felt like I was starting to unlock different aspects of my playing, maybe that I hadn't been able to touch on in my main projects, which was super cool. And, you know, and then through that, my buddy Mark, who produced all the Celebrity albums, was like, I want to form a tongue-in-cheek, cliche rock and roll band. Do you guys... And he like assembled like a super team of people here locally, and we made an EP and called it The Good Wolves.
I'm following you. I'm following along on your website. We're picking all these off.
Yeah.
This is perfect.
And then my buddy Ryan Burleson, who was in a band you may remember called Embraced. They were on Theory 8 Records. They were a melodic hardcore band. They did a couple opening slots with Under Oath back in the day.
I don't remember.
He lived
them,
here
okay.
locally, and you know, we like a lot of ambient kind of soundtracky style stuff, so we just started writing stuff with our friend Patrick, who's a piano player, and then we put an EP out and called it Southern, and it's Southern, just ambient kind of soundscape type of music. So I've kept pretty busy, I feel like, over the years, whether it's through Celebrity or these little one-off side projects that I've been able to be involved in, which have been super fun. And then that kind of, you know, brings it all the way to In Parallel. You know, Celebrity broke up in 2008 and we took a break. And then Lance and I, the singer of Celebrity, started talking again and started writing and trading ideas. And then we looped in Jesse, our bass player from Celebrity. And that's kind of where we're at, you know, currently, is working on this EP for In Parallel. And, trying to get that out, you know, which, as you know, as an adult nearing your 40s and you've got jobs and families, it's harder to kind of make the time. But we've made a concerted effort to try and make this EP happen, even though it seems like it's taken us forever. But we're in the home stretch, we're mixing it right now, and super excited about it. Probably more excited about this than anything I've ever done, and I know everyone says that. Every musician says that, but I really
it's probably the strongest songwriting I've ever done. Yeah.
And I'm fully aware how cliche that sounds saying it, but I mean, we're super excited, and I feel like we're touching on things that I've wanted to really touch on musically and lyrically that I think I couldn't have done in my younger years. You know, I've got more perspective now, and that's exciting.
Definitely. It's all formative, man. I'm kind of going blind on what it sounds like, but you were describing it to me.
Yeah.
And I had this conversation with Chris Raines about Sundrug, where I said there seems to be
I love Chris, and I love everything that group of guys does. Spitfire, the Sundrug stuff's awesome.
Talented group, yeah. It seems to be some sort of a... it seems to be some sort of almost logical progression with heavy musicians, heavy, you know, from heavy music around this age, where they almost start to touch into the electronic stuff. And I think it has to do, I think I've had this conversation before, probably with Chris, that it's kind of two things going on, three things going on. One, a lot of these bands are corresponding because nobody lives on the same block and we have band practice three times a week anymore. Like, those days are gone because we're all
old. They're gone.
Kids, and, right, exactly. So everybody lives all over the place, so it kind of becomes a correspondence digital thing. Secondly, it just seems to be like all those Nine Inch Nails influences are coming out. Like, when we were playing heavy music in that era, late 90s and stuff, there wasn't a lot of electronics in heavy music. It was like, if it swung so heavy that it became electronic, it fell into the industrial bin. And it was like, well, I don't want to be Ministry or Clank or whatever, but... I feel like it's
It went kind of like the Joy Electric route, where it's very poppy and, you know, polished. I felt like that's where the scene was at back then. It was like either like industrial or really synthy poppy.
Right. So now there seems to be like, with all the subgenres of everything going on with music, I feel like we're kind of coming around to that now, where it's kind of become like a neat marriage of like, you know, I was influenced by... whatever, Shadows Fall and Radiohead, and like, you can't mix those two. It doesn't make any sense. But then, like, give it another 10 years, and we're kind of figuring out how to smash this music together. And I'm not saying In Parallel is anywhere near that heavy, but I mean, all these electronic influences seem to be just kind of shaken loose from these musicians, and it's super exciting, because the last thing you want to do is put out Hopes Fall again, or the same thing you already did again, because then you're just riding that nostalgic wave of, look what I did again, you know?
I think there's a certain comfort in that, you know, maybe writing how you've always written. And I don't knock anyone that does that. I personally always want to do something new and kind of push myself to an area that might make me uncomfortable. And incorporating electronic aspects into music was very uncomfortable for me. But that's also what was exciting about it is... there's this piece of technology or pieces of technology out there that I can utilize. I don't necessarily know how to utilize them yet, but if I teach myself a little bit, maybe we can incorporate this. And for me, you know, and I'm sure like Chris mentioned this when you did the interview with him, you know, my early influences were very electronic oriented. I mean, some of my favorite music is stuff from the 80s and, you know, bands like Depeche Mode and The Cure and Tears for Fears and that aspect, and even like Genesis, like that electronic aspect's always been fascinating to me. So now the technology's cheaper, which makes it easier to incorporate. It's a lot easier to learn because you can just go on YouTube and watch people do it.
Yep.
And I think all of those things combined have made that something you see more now, because it's just more accessible. Whereas before, I mean, Nine Inch Nails is probably carting around a $9,000 vintage synth, you know, and you don't have to do that anymore.
Sure. It all comes in a chip now. It's already in your laptop.
Yeah.
So, talk to that a little bit. Like, what, like you said, like before, all the bands that you were in, whether it be Hopes Fall or Celebrity or all the other stuff from before, it was you plugging in a guitar and feeding back and screwing with pedals and and tuning your guitar and annoying everybody. Now you're getting into something that makes you super uncomfortable because you're mixing the electronic aspect. What is going on that's uncomfortable about? Like, what is the process, or what is the lack of process that's making you uncomfortable?
How do we make this work? Because for me, I will always need a guitar. I need that tactile, real thing. I need to actually like feel air moving from an amp. So in parallel, it's nothing unique in the sense that we're trying to reinvent the wheel, but how do we filter a rock band through an electronic means? So it's still three guys on stage holding guitars and a bass, but there's a lot of synth loops, drum loops, things like that that are happening that kind of give it this other palette that we were never really able to tap into when we were just a you know, guitar, drums, bass kind of band. We don't have a drummer, which is part of it. So when we play live, there's no drummer back there. It's loops and things that we've built that we're triggering. We're not opposed to bringing on a drummer at some point live, but the really tricky part for us was trying to figure out how do we execute it live and make that happen and make it cool and not feel empty without having a drummer there.
Yeah.
So we had to work through that and had a couple glitches here and there, but I feel like we're in a good place. And hopefully once this EP is done, we can get back out there and start trying to test some stuff live locally and see how it goes.
Have there been a lot of live shows?
A handful. You know, we've had some starts and stops. You know, I mean, part of it is just the phase of life that we're in, you know, different demands, and sometimes we'll have to hit pause. And but we've played a handful of shows. The responses have been really cool, specifically from people that knew us from our previous band, and people saying, "Wow, that's not what I expected," which is always what I like to hear.
Yeah, right.
You know, as someone that plays, that's kind of the point. And
right.
I don't know. I mean, you know, if you've listened to Celebrity, obviously there's a continuation there. It's very shoegazy, washed out guitars. But, you know, I think we're definitely delving more into like the Depeche Mode vibe and maybe even some of the lighter Nine Inch Nails stuff. And, you know, Adore era Smashing Pumpkins type of vibe. Which is really big for me.
On Bill's podcast, you mentioned how big Smashing Pumpkins was. So that's what I heard from Celebrity was the that just fuzzy, that constant fuzzy underneath, just like shoegazy. I don't know. I wasn't a huge shoegaze fan, but it just had like a fuzzy undertone to it. Just this noisy kind of vibe underneath it. I'm really doing a bad job describing it.
Yeah, music is best heard, not described anyway, right? I mean, you start putting categories and classifications on everything, and
I could
muddies it up a bit.
I could listen to something and come up with five perfect examples of who it reminds me of, and somebody would get a hold of me and be like, "You're an idiot. I don't hear that."
Yeah, so that's the magic, man.
To the ear of the beholder, right?
Absolutely.
Of all the stuff that you mentioned that I don't know about, I knew about Hope's Fall, Celebrity, and In Parallel. I feel like everybody did. Going to your website, Sincerity Guild, the new, the Good Wolves, and Southern are all news to me. But you said Sincerity Guild was an instrumental band with a really good drummer. I'm all over that.
Yeah, I mean, Sincerity Guild, my buddy Aaron, probably the best drummer I've ever played with. I mean, just a unique talent, a total monster, and the most energy of any human I've ever met. But okay. It was his project. He wrote all the music and kind of would assemble, you know, members as needed. And I think I played with them for about a year and a half and did like a little mini tour and played a bunch of shows. I mean, we played tons of shows here locally, kind of in the Jawbox like realm of things, very angular, you know, fast, really odd time signatures, that kind of thing. Super fun. And my buddy Ryan Burleson played guitar in that as well, who ended up playing on the Southern EP with me. So it's all kind of incestuous. And Aaron, actually, from Sincerity Guild, played drums on the Southern EP as well.
Okay.
Contribute all the drumming parts to that, which was a super fun project.
Are you going to call Aaron to play drums for In Parallel when it comes time?
Oh, man, if he was here, he's in North Carolina now, back in my home state. But But if he was here, I'd absolutely ring him up. He's one of my favorite people to play with, and you should check him out. I mean, if he did, he just did Billy's podcast. He went on to play with Trail of Dead and Copeland and a bunch of other bands.
Oh, that Eric. Okay. I knew the name.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I hear Aaron Ford, and I just think, I know the name, but I'm probably just confusing it with John Ford. So I just...
Yeah, well, it's easy to do.
Yeah, but I got it now. Okay. All right.
John's a total beast as well. Bass player. Man. Absolutely amazing.
Elusive. I want him on the show.
Oh, yeah. Dude, yeah. Roadside, man, for me, yeah. Loved him.
I want to talk about what you do for a living, for your day job.
Yeah, totally.
You have a little button here to click on Producer Reel, and you click on this website. I'm going to put this in show notes, RyanEdwardParish.com. This could just be a music discography site. There's so much on it, but then the Producer Reel thing, you start reading that, and you're like, oh my God, this dude does everything. So go ahead. You have the floor.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's been a very... My professional... Your audience can't see this. My professional life.
He's air quoting. He's rabbit earing.
It's been a very, again, a roller coaster. I mean, after the band stuff, I was working in a record store. I was working a corporate drone position in an office building for many years. I worked in a book warehouse. Moving college textbooks. I worked for a printing company. I kind of went round and round and round after I decided to not do music full time, and really struggled with that actually for a while. But sure. I decided to go back to school in 2007 part time for a technical degree in audio and production, with the intention of potentially going into recording, and finished that school. It was 2 years, did it at night part-time while I was working full-time, and was also interning at a recording studio here in town that does a lot of big country records. And to diversify my portfolio, so to speak, I went to my career counselor at school and was like, hey, you know, if this audio thing doesn't work out, do you have another internship that's somewhat related? And she's like, well, I have an internship with this video production company. Would you be interested in that? And I said, absolutely. And called them up, and they brought me on board as an intern. And this is a 30-year-old intern. So keep that in mind. I was a 30-year-old man interning for free, which was humbling. But I was willing to do whatever it took to kind of, you know, take it to the next level with my job. And through that internship, built some relationships there, and a couple of the people that left that company joined another company, and then I got brought on and hired at that company, which is called Studio Now, which is a startup slash video company. We basically match brands and agencies with creatives, whether that be videographers, voiceover actors, animators, editors, talent agencies, whatever. So,
interesting.
I'm a producer there, so I basically see a project through from its inception to end, and okay. I'm kind of the liaison between the client and the crew, the people that actually physically go out and shoot. Sometimes I get to attend the shoots, sometimes I'm managing remotely. So that's what I do during the day. It pays the bills, and it's been interesting. I mean, I work with some big clients.
Anything that we'd know that you did?
Yeah, I mean, currently I'm working with Wall Street Journal, Ritz-Carlton, Chase Credit Cards.
Heard of it? Yeah.
My main account that I kind of takes up about half of my day is PricewaterhouseCoopers, which is one of the largest tax and accounting firms in the country.
Wow.
We also work with Coke, McDonald's, you name it, Caterpillar, the construction brand. I mean,
yep.
It's kind of all over the map. I mean, I've been able to work with a lot of cool companies and a lot of cool people. And been able to build relationships with a ton of filmmakers and editors and animators, which is super fun. And, you know, I still get to be creative at my day job and talk to creative people, and that's important to me. And, you know, I feel really lucky because I definitely had some jobs that were, you know, awful. And, and it's good to be in a place where you feel like you're contributing.
So you're, how old are you now?
I'm 37. I'll be 38 at the end of the year. So I'm rounding the corner to 40.
So you got, it's okay, man. It doesn't hurt.
No, I feel good about it.
It does. It did hurt. It hurt a lot, actually. So to be a 30-year-old unpaid intern, mm-hmm. and now looking back on it, you're 37 and you're project manager and working with all these big things. At the risk of getting a little too personal, I don't expect you to crack your checkbook open or anything, but how'd you stay afloat? You weren't making money off of celebrity or the Southern or
oh, hell no.
No,
not off Hope's Fall either. And I mean, there's no royalty checks coming in. I mean,
no, exactly.
To burst the bubble of all the young aspiring artists out there. Sorry, but
if they didn't figure it out by now, God bless them. Yeah, you'll make millions.
Still go for it. I mean, go for it. I'll never be the person to say not go for it. Absolutely right. Go for it. It's an amazing experience, but don't.
It's just not going to buy you a house.
Yeah, you better start playing with Bieber if you want to, you know, pay the bills.
But how'd you pull that off, man? That's amazing. Like, I'm just thinking of my own life. I got married at 25. I had twins at 27.
Well, that changes things though, man. I mean, I didn't have kids. I still don't have kids, but
at 30 years old, if I'd have been like, you know what, I want to go back to school and try some new stuff, and I'm not gonna get paid for a while, we'd have been living in a box. How'd you pull it off?
I don't know.
Did you live in a box?
Well, I mean, I lived very frugally through that period of my life. My wife, she was not my wife at the time, but we were dating. You know, was a huge support network for me. And I kind of really, you know, she's really the, you know, the moral to this story. I mean, she was hugely supportive and helped me out during that time, but. It was crazy, man. I mean, that 2-year period, I was in school 2 nights a week, and then Saturday and Sunday, I would go and do these labs where I would work with the equipment and learn it. So that was Tuesday, Thursday, and then it was either Monday, Wednesday, or Wednesday, Friday. I would intern at night, and then I had a 40-hour day job during the day. So that 2-year span, I'm not joking, dude. I don't remember a lot of it because it was just like go, 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 go.
Sure.
But, you know, part of it was, you know, luck. Part of it was just showing up. And I think, you know, that's kind of how life is. You got to show up. You got to put in the effort. But there's also an element of, you know, luck can play a part, being in the right place at the right time, you know. Mm-hmm. And meeting people that, you know, will give you a shot, which they did. I mean, it would have been much easier to give the 24-year-old right out of college a shot because he's way cheaper or she's way cheaper to hire than a 30-year-old. Sure. But it was humbling, man. And it was good for me, though. I think you'll learn a lot about yourself when you do that kind of thing.
Plus, now, being in the position that you're in, when somebody else comes to you at 24 years old and tells you how hard it is, you kind of earn the right to be like, hey, kiddo, like...
Yeah, you don't want to be the grandpa, you know, and like, you'd be like back in my day or whatever, but...
Right.
Here's what it's done. It's given me a different appreciation of my situation and where I'm at, because there were a lot of lean years, man. I mean, from Hope's Fall until really that gig that I got, which was back in 2011, which is when I was hired, it was lean and mean. I mean, I made it and I'm fine, but, you know, it was definitely counting every penny and, okay, sure. Well, can I buy, you know, can I go out and have one beer with my friend tonight you know?
No.
No, I can't. I've got to save that for my electricity bill or whatever. So
sure. Yeah.
But man, that stuff's great. I mean, that's what life is. And you come out the other side and I feel like you're more appreciative when you go through those types of moments, you know?
You ain't just whistling Dixie. That I threw you that one as a Southern. you had to be there, man. The whole mile in the moccasins thing, the whole like, wow, that sounds really tough. That must have been tough. No, you've no idea.
I mean, on the comparison level, I mean, my life has been very cush and I mean, there's entire countries of people that, you know, make a dollar a day, you know? So
of course,
in the grand scheme, I feel pretty damn blessed, you know? And feel really lucky to be where I'm at. I can still play music, which is awesome. I have a roof over my head and, an amazing wife and, it's good.
All right. So he made it. The kid made it out the other side. He's still alive.
Oh man, you always climbing, you know?
Always. What's your wife's name?
She has a really unique name, actually. Her name's Tyne, T-Y-N-E.
Oh, okay.
It gets mispronounced a lot, but...
I would have mispronounced that.
Yeah, it's a river in England, actually.
Oh, okay.
But there was an actress in like the 70s and 80s named Tyne Daly. I don't know if you're familiar, but I think that's where the inspiration for the name came.
Okay.
They just like the sound of it.
I was just going to say, make sure you tell your wife thank you for letting me steal you for a while.
Oh, man, yeah, absolutely.
I just wanted to ask her name, and now I learned she has a unique name, Tyne.
Tyne, yeah, yeah.
Ryan, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, this has been a blast, man, for real.
That's all you get, jerks!
As the story grows.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.